Good morning. It's good to see everybody out. And if you're visiting with us, we are especially thankful for your presence. Hope you open your Bible study along with us. I was thinking about this lesson this week, and in a sense that how would you define greatness? And it probably depends what area you're talking about. In athletics and sports, we would be tempted to define greatness by simple athletic ability. But you stop thinking about it and realize that that's not really true. I mean, there are some great people that come to mind when you look at them and you realize they were blessed with such great athletic ability. But a lot of people we consider to be great athletes were in some ways not much better than anybody else in their field. For instance, I remember the days of Pete Rose. And Pete Rose has the most hits in all baseball. He was, I don't know how many championships he won. And yet, Pete Rose was not gifted necessarily with lightning speed. He wasn't the fastest person on baseball diamond. He couldn't throw the ball the farthest to anybody. He couldn't hit the ball farthest to anybody else. But the fact is, Pete Rose simply hustled every play he ever played. If he hit a ground ball in the infield, he ran as hard as he could to first base. If he hit a ball to outfield, he ran as hard as he could. If he got caught, he ran hard back to the dugout. If he didn't get caught, then he would actually round first base and see if he thought he could get a double out of that single. And a number of years, he actually led the National League or the baseball in doubles because he hustled. Or you may think about other people in the area of business or academia. We may think sometimes about the idea that just the smartest people are the greatest, but a lot of times it's something more involved than simply being smart. And so when you think about greatness in the area of serving God, how do you think about that? And I remember somebody said that a great person is an ordinary person doing ordinary things during extraordinary times. Another person said that a great person is somebody that reminds you of nobody else. Well, I want to talk about one of the great people of the Bible, and that's Joseph this morning. I saw this. I use this template here for my PowerPoint just because it reminds me of his coat of many colors. That's basically why it's up there. But we're reading about Joseph, and again, there's very few people I would put higher than him in the list of extraordinary characters in the Bible. He'll be in my top five definitely. He may be up there in top three, in fact. But stop thinking about Joseph. What made him such a great person? And let me give you, first of all, the fact that he was faithful. And in fact, that's a common theme throughout this lesson when we stop thinking about it. And that no matter what he did, no matter what duty he had, he was faithful in discharging his duties. And read about that in a sense of his early part of his life. We read over in Genesis, third chapter that was read for us a few minutes ago, and we see that as far as the relation between Joseph and his brothers, that they hated him because it said Joseph brought back a bad report of them to his father. And not only that, but also that his father made him a tunic of many colors. But also I notice verse 2 there said that he was 17 years of age. A young man by all standards. And yet when he's given a task to do, and that is when he's sent to go out there and see about his brothers, that he did what his father said to him. It wasn't anything extraordinary. And I dare to say that a lot of people had done that before. A lot of young men had been given such a task by their dad to do some kind of job, and yet he didn't. And if that was all, we would say, well, big deal. But I notice as we go ahead and read on down about Joseph, in verse 12, they say, then his brothers went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, are not your brothers feeding the flock in Shechem? Come, I will send you to them. So he said to him, here I am. And he said to him, please go and see if it is well with your brothers and well with the flocks and bring back word to me. So he sent him out of the valley of Hebron and he went to Shechem. Now a certain man found him and there he was wandering the field. And the man asked him, saying, what are you seeking? So he said, I'm seeking my brothers. Please tell me where they are feeding their flocks. And the man said, they had departed from here. If I heard them say, let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. And again, as you read through that passage, it doesn't seem to be anything really extraordinary as far as what he did in this case. But one thing I noticed is that when he's given a task to do by his dad, and the task was, go and see about your brothers and report back to me. And they're supposed to be at Shechem. That when they weren't at Shechem, Joseph didn't just turn around and just go back to his father and said, you know, Dad, I was there and I don't know what happened to them. They weren't there. Joseph actually, when he heard that they had gone to Dothan, went the extra mile. He went to Dothan to find out about his brothers. And you know, a lot of times faithfulness is doing that extra mile, doing the extra thing. Again, there wasn't anything great here. But a lot of times I think Christians may think about trying to get by the minimum. Let's see how little I can do and still be faithful. Let's see how little I can attend services, how little I can study my Bible, or how little, and we kind of, if we're not careful, get into a trap of thinking about littleness, about the minimum instead of the maximum as far as what we need to be doing to serve God. And so as you think about Joseph here, we find that Joseph, he was faithful at young year age, and not only that, but also was faithful no matter where he was at. As you go on, we find a Potiphar's house. Then when he winds up in there as a slave to his father's, to Potiphar, we read about this young man in the 39th chapter. And there, verse 1, it says, now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, that the Lord made all they did to prosper his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. They made him overseer of this house, and all they had he put under his authority. So it was from that time that he had made an overseer of his house, and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was all they had in the house and in the field. And I realize, again, reading through this passage, that so many times it's stressed here, the Lord is with him and the Lord blessed him. But I submit to you that also that Joseph, the reason all these good things happen is because he was faithful. It wasn't a case where he could be as a young man saying, you know, I'm not here by my own initiative. I'm not here because I want to be here. And I should be back in my homeland. And I'm not going to serve you. I'm not going to do anything until you release me. That was what Joseph did. Joseph found himself in some very trying situations. Some very hard situations. And every time Joseph was placed in that situation, you notice here that Joseph remained faithful. It didn't matter where he was at. Joseph remained faithful. In Potiphar's household, he's faithful to Potiphar. And then when he's put in prison, we find that in prison. Again, all these things are pretty extraordinary, but yet when you look at it, you think that there really wasn't anything extraordinary at all about it. In Potiphar's household, he served Potiphar well. In prison, you read about him in the 39th chapter of 23. It said, the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, whatever he did, the Lord made it prosper. Again, the Lord is very prominent in all these passages here. But just keep in mind here, that here in prison of all places, Joseph could have easily said, I don't want to be here. I should not be here. I was innocent of any charge against me. And, you know, I just don't rely upon me to do anything. But that was what Joseph did. Joseph excelled. He was faithful, even in prison. He was faithful to the Lord and made him special. And made him a special prisoner. And so the prisoner, keeper of the prison recognized that. And that's how Joseph became in charge of the prison. And then when you go on, you find in Pharaoh's. And when he served Pharaoh. And he eventually came to be second in command in that position there. But again, it's pretty extraordinary when you stop thinking about it. And then here is a person in prison and becomes second in command. But when you read about what Joseph did once he got in that position, in the 41st chapter 40, after he had interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and Pharaoh turned and said, you should be over my house, and all my people shall be ruled according to your word, unregarded to the throne, while I be greater than you. And as we read about Joseph at that time onward, Joseph did exactly what Pharaoh expected him to do. Joseph told him how to prepare for the famines that was coming up and for the drought, and how to be ready in the sense of feeding the people. And basically Joseph just implemented the plan that he had explained to Pharaoh. And yet he was faithful in doing that. And so the thing about Joseph was, underlying, if nothing else will walk away today, you say, Dennis said Joseph was faithful. And the thing about that, faithful is a way of living. And it's not a one-time event. A lot of times today, I go to funerals or somebody may at one time have served God, and sometimes they fall away from God, and the person said, well, at one time, they were a faithful member of the church, or at one time, they gave their life to Christ. You realize the faithfulness in the Bible is not just a one-time event. It is a continual way of living. It doesn't matter where you're at. You think about a faithful child. A faithful child will obey the parents no matter where they're at. If a child will only obey their parents while mom and dad is standing over them, while they're with mom and dad, you know, that's really not obedience, but it is compliance. But a faithful child actually obey their parents even when mom and dad is not around. You think about a faithful spouse. Well, it's not just one that's always faithful as long as the spouse is around, but even when they're not around. They're still faithful to their spouse. Otherwise, it's called immorality. And so you think about that sense, it's a way of living. And so it is with a Christian. A Christian will be faithful to their master no matter what age they are, because again, as you look at Joseph, we go from 17 in the 37th chapter of Genesis, all the way to the end of his life in the 50th chapter. And so Joseph, I think about 120, if my memory serves me right, I may be off a few years there. But if you think about that, all the way through his life, he was faithful to God. He didn't have a time period that was just faithful. And not only that, but also his faithful to God in Canaan, and his faithful to God in Egypt. Didn't matter where he was at either. And so as Christians, we have to realize that faithfulness is not dependent on where we're at, and also our stage of life. It's always to be a consistent thing in our living. But let's look here at Joseph a little bit more. Because there's four statements Joseph makes in the book of Genesis that really stands out to me. And one of those statements is an idea of, I cannot sin against God. Now, those of you familiar with Genesis know what I talked about here. In the 39th chapter of Genesis, we find that in a Potiphar's household, he's placed in command, and Joseph does well and exceeds his over the household, but there comes a point here where Joseph has temptation to come across to him. And in the 9th chapter of this house, his wife, Potiphar's wife, comes to him and basically tries to seduce him. And verse 9, she said, and his response to that in verse 9 is, there's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? You know, when you think about Joseph's life in a Potiphar household, this wasn't the only temptation, I'm sure, that existed in that household. And in other words, there could have been a temptation in that household of simply the idea of greed. That he's in charge of whatever Potiphar has. Potiphar was an important man in Pharaoh's government. And I'm sure that he had all kinds of luxuries and all kinds of wealth around him. And basically, Potiphar put Joseph in command of him, and kind of like he just trusts him, allows him to oversee it. And Joseph, I'm sure, had the opportunity. He had wanted to. He could have actually been greedy. He could have actually taken advantage of his master for himself. But as you read about him, we find that that's not what he does. That he basically, verse 6 there says, thus he has left all that he had in Joseph's hand. He did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. And just think about that, and that is that just giving total control to somebody that was a stranger, even a prison, if you would, or as a slave, being sold to him in this case. And yet, he just placed that position. But Joseph was faithful in dispensing with the menial task overseeing a man's house. And not only that, but also, he as a young man, that you read about him, he found, as last part of verse 6 here says, he was handsome in form and appearance. And here he was, a young, handsome man, and not only that, but he's alone. Mom and dad and all his brothers are down there up there in Israel. And this is a case where a lot of times people may decide that because they're by themselves, because they're away from home, or because there's temptation, that they're just kind of give in to it. And you know, temptation comes in all different forms of life. And sometimes it's very subtle. It may be a very subtle temptation as far as trying to cheat on a test or trying to maybe try to take something that's not yours to something small. In this case here, Joseph, though, is like a freight train, wasn't it? And that is temptation, in this case here, wasn't subtle at all. That is, she tried to seduce him, and she let him know that she was a willing partner. And as you read about Joseph, though, he was one that did not give in. He had the opportunity to sin. He had a house by himself, and he had a woman that was willing, and let him know that she was willing to be part of this. And as you think about Joseph, though, he said, I cannot sin against God. Notice here, then in verse 7, again, it came to pass in these things, the master's wife cast flowing eyes, Joseph, she said, lie with me. But there's a thing about, he thought about God first. He thought about God. He didn't think about everything else that people may kind of rationalize about. And think, okay, again, who else would hurt or what's harming this here? That he thought about God. How can I sin against God? And he realized that it would be a betrayal of trust to God. And not only that, this use of position in the house. And not only that, but also betrayal of his master. And so we think about that, and he just brings out the fact here that he would be sinning against his master even if he had taken advantage of this opportunity. And we just have to keep in mind in verse 8 and 9, said, he refused, said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is in me in the house. He has committed all the hands of my hand. There's no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness of sin against God? And we want to be sin, faithful. We have to just realize that all sins is ultimately against God. Even if you have a willing partner, even if nobody else knows about it, even if it's away from home, it's still a sin against God. And as somebody one time said about sin, that sin will take you farther than what you want to go, cost more than what you want to pay, and keep you longer than you want to stay. Well, it's never minimized the sin against God. The second thing Joseph said that really stands out to me in his life is that when he came to interpreting the dreams, and that is Joseph, and he says, they said God will give the answer. In the first situation, we find when Pharaoh has his dreams. And nobody can interpret them. Nobody knew what the dreams was. Nobody could interpret those dreams. And they said, well, Joseph. And so the butler and the baker remember Joseph, or the one that's still alive in that case. And he said, this guy could interpret dreams. So they bring him in. And as you think about what Joseph said to him, Pharaoh said to Joseph, I have had a dream, and there's no one who can interpret it. But I've heard it said of you that you can understand a dream to interpret it. Now notice here, Pharaoh's putting the emphasis on Joseph here, that you can interpret it, you. So Joseph answered Pharaoh saying, it's not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And what he does is he takes emphasis off himself, and he's not trying to glorify himself, but he's trying to glorify God. He wants Pharaoh to know, I'm nothing special. And here's a guy out of prison that they cleaned up and got prepared to be suitable to face Pharaoh. And Joseph could have easily said, well, yes, you're right. You know, whatever, don't keep me out of prison. Yes, I can do this here. Just as long as I get some praise out of this, I'm happy with this. It's not what he does. He says, God. He points the finger at God. He says, he's the one that's going to give you the answer. And again, that was consistent with Joseph. Because if you go back and you read in this chapter, in the 40th chapter of Genesis, you read about the butler and the baker and the interpretation of those dreams, you'll find that in verse 8 of the 40th chapter, they said, and we've each had a dream, there's no interpreter of it. So he said to Joseph, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them to me, please. And he's simply just pointing out here, God's going to give the interpretation. And so he makes that point to them. And really there's two things about this I want to stress. One is, Joseph wanted to give the credit to God. Simple and true enough. No matter what Joseph did, it seemed like he always wanted to give credit to God and not himself. Success can sometimes create the temptation of building ourselves up, of wanting to be built up in the eyes of other people, of wanting them to think that we are really more than what we are, wanting them to praise us, wanting them to elevate us above where we really are. And that's part of the temptation of success. And we're warned about that in the sense of Romans 12 or 3. It says, "For I say through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than the other thing, but to think soberly, as God's dealt each one a measure of faith." And dealing with whatever we have as far as our abilities, we realize that we have to train, we have to work, but God gives us the abilities. If He gives us the opportunity to do things, He gives us the ability to do things, we have to think about the fact to give credit to God. I know a lot of times it's very hypocritical. When you watch a war shows or somebody gets an award and they say, "I thank God," or they praise God, and we may sometimes think, yeah, your whole lifestyle is totally against the Bible, and this is an empty praise of God, and that's true. But you know, one thing about it is that we need to give that thanks to God. We can give it to Him and not be hypocritical. We can give it to Him and actually be doing what's right. And so he gave the praise to God. And not only that, but also he points out that when you think about it, that God has the answers. Now, in Joseph's case here, it was going to be an interpretation of dreams. So obviously, this is going to be the idea of miraculous interpretation. And I know what I'm saying, that God is going to give you a miraculous manifestation of an answer to a prayer, or show you all of a sudden a bright light, and going to whisper your name and say, "Here's what I want you to do." It's not going to work that way. But you have to realize that the book of James talks about wisdom. And about if anyone seeks wisdom, anyone wants to know, have wisdom, what are we supposed to do? It says, ask of God. Knowledge, study the word of God, we are to do. We're to study our Bibles. But you have to realize that as far as wisdom is concerned, of how to apply the word of God, we can ask of God. And so that's what we're to do in this case here. Study our Bible and then let it guide us as far as what we are to do in our lives. And so God will give us the answer. Another phrase Joseph made is at the end of his life, or towards the end of his life. And that is, he makes a statement, says, "Am I in the place of God?" Now here he is at the end of his life. We're getting closer to the end of his life. And he's a place of authority by now. His brothers are with him. And that their father has passed away. And the brothers apparently had figured that the reason Joseph had not harmed them down there in Egypt when they brought their families and all their belongings to Egypt during the time of the famine, the reason was because their dad was still alive. Jacob was still alive. And so they thought, okay, now their dad is gone, that wasn't going to stop Joseph from killing us. And so they come to Joseph. They start pleading with him. And Joseph said to them, "Do not be afraid, for am I in the place of God?" And you know, again, that is a very important statement, because he's thinking about the reasons he had to hate his brothers. And they gave him reasons. Sometimes you'll have siblings that get together after they grow up and start talking about the old days. And they'll start talking about mean things they had done to one another. If you talk to Sharon, we're not that bad, by the way. But a lot of times you hear somebody start talking about what they did their sister or the brother or siblings. And you're like, boy, tell you what, they were mean. They were mean. Well, yeah, I don't know how many of you have mean brothers or sisters, but I dare say don't really come close to Joseph's. Because Joseph, they debated killing him. I mean, they literally put him into a pit in Genesis 37 chapter, and they talked about the idea of killing him. And let me just turn over there, 37th chapter, and verse 18 and 20. And that case says, when they saw him afar off, and before he came near them, they conspired against him to kill him. Then they said to one another, "Look, this dreamer is coming. Come now, therefore, let us now kill him and cast him into some pit. And we shall say, some wild beast has devoured him. We shall see what has become of his dreams." And how many times did we read the word kill in these three verses? And they had a plan. They all had thought this thing out here, how to get by with that. They were serious about this. And not only that, but also he knew that they had talked about killing him. Because of interest to us. As far as his reaction to what they're doing. And not only that, but also they sold into slavery. No, they didn't kill him, but they actually decided, let's get some profit out of this. So they sold into slavery. And it could easily have brought up the fact that you condemned me to a life of servitude. You didn't know what was going to happen to me. When they sold him to the traders, they took him down to Egypt. He could have had hard labor and died very quickly. And they didn't know it was going to turn out okay with Joseph, but they sold him in the being property of another person. I mean, that's mean. And on that, but also they were always jealous and envious of his young boy. He'd go back to his father and say, you know, while I was a young boy, you all hated me. And that all been pretty close to being right. That'd been right. But that's the thing about it, Joseph wasn't about getting retribution. And what Joseph was about was trusting God. In the 45th chapter, verse 5, whenever they come, the brothers come to Egypt. And Joseph sees them. We have the test given to them the first time they come. As they leave back with the food, and Joseph gives them back their money, and they eventually have to come back the second time. The second time they come back, and now this time that Joseph reveals himself to the brothers. And doing that, in verse 5 of this 45th chapter says, do not be, therefore be greed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me for you to preserve life. For these 2 years, the famine has been in the land. There are still 5 years which there shall be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God sent me before you to prepare a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by great deliverance. And instead of taking retribution, when he simply said that he didn't realize that God was still with him, even in slavery. Now, that's not his situation ethics, by the way. He's not discounting what they were doing. But what he's doing is, he said, you had done all this for evil, but God did it for good. And again, to us, the Apostle Paul says something very hard to do. And when somebody does something spitefully, somebody hurts you, somebody strikes out against you. He said, Romans 12, verse 14, bless those who persecute you, bless and not curse. You know, that's hard to do when we stop thinking about it. If you've ever had somebody that you know that despised you, they did everything hateful they could to you, and Paul said, I don't want you to try to take a retribution for them. In fact, down in verse 17, he said, repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If as possible, as much depends on you, live peacefully with all men. Beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath, for it's written, vengeance of mine I will repay, says the Lord. Therefore, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him a drink, for so doing you will heap coals of fire on his head. Do not be overcome, but you will overcome evil with good. In other words, you do good that person, but I tell you what, God will do the judging. And leave God, leave that part up to God. And that's kind of hard sometimes because there's times we may be faced with very situations that we want to take vengeance. That maybe is not doing that well, I have grudges. And again, Ephesians 4 verse 26, be angry, do not sin, do not let the sun go down your wrath. In other words, don't let it simmer, don't let it just stay there and boil over. You gotta let go, you gotta handle it. But you got to take care of it. Don't just let it stay there. And when you get right down to it, grudges only hurt the person carrying it. And not only that, but also a lot of times good situations or good things happen out of bad situations, as Joseph testifies to us. You'll find a lot of times successful people have had a lot of bad things happen to them. And instead of them letting it make them bitter or hateful or vengeful, that they use it to make them better. And that's what we're doing in our lives also. But then let me give you one last thing that Joseph did, that one last statement he made. And that is a very simple statement. And that is as he's dying. And this years later now, as he's dying, he says to them in Genesis 50 verse 24, he says, I'm dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and I shall carry my bones up from here. And you may think, well, that's really not the same kind of statement. I mean, it's not like God's going to give you the answer, or am I in the place of God, or any kind of statement like that, or how can I sin against God? What Joseph simply does here is as Joseph's dying, he sees the big picture. And the big picture is not Egypt, but the big picture for him and his people is the land of Canaan. He trusted God to fulfill his promise to his ancestors. And same thing for us today, that as we look, we have to keep the big picture in our mind. You know, as we had that song we sang a little while ago of 254, on Jordan's stormy banks of stand. And you think about the children of Israel, and think about Moses as he was there, and he could not enter the land of Canaan, but he could see it. Or you think about the children of Israel, as they saw, they got that close to the land of Canaan, but then had turned back for 40 years. You know what they talked about? Besides grumbling and complaining, they talked about the land of Canaan. And finally, they had to go in. Well, in our lives here, we are looking towards that land of Canaan, our land of Canaan in heaven. And we need to keep our eye on there. And just remember that God will fulfill His promises to those who are faithful. I appreciate your kind attention this morning. And so now we have the song of encouragement. And that is that a great person simply does what God